Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
We welcome you aboard our Highway of Guide.
If you're standing, please hold on to the handrails and stay clear of the automatic doors. They will be closing in a moment. Thank you.
Welcome to the Monorail Tales, and boy, do we have an exciting show ahead of us. On this episode, we have a very special guest joining us, and we're going to hear what it was like working for Disney for 30 years, starting as an assistant store manager at a Disney store in England, and working his way up the corporate ladder to becoming the vice president of Disney stores in North America, with quite a few different leadership roles in between, including Director of Marketing and Consumer Experience for Europe, and also Vice President for Global Guest Experience. Now that our guest has recently retired from Disney, we will also get to hear about his new adventures that he's about to take on. And just for fun, we will sprinkle this episode with a little bit of Star Wars. But before we introduce our guest, I think I'd better introduce my co-host for the show, which is the one and only Al. Hello, Al.
Good evening, listeners. Happy to be aboard and happy to be speaking to a wonderful man who was my former boss, who most of us consider to be the closest thing to Walt Disney who we ever knew, Mr. Jonathan Story. So I'm happy to be along on the show. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be on the show.
And I know, Al, when we have talked to you, you shared a very special moment working for the Disney store. And I know somewhere along this episode, I'm sure it's going to come in to play, but you actually have met in real life our special guest. So I think we should get this episode started by saying it's my great pleasure and Al's great pleasure to introduce Mr. Jonathan Story to the show. So welcome, Jonathan.
Hello. Good to be here. Very excited to be. I'll be honest, this is kind of the first time I've ever been interviewed on a podcast. So bear with me.
Chances are it's going to be your last ever experience with us. So
I'm sure not.
Well, it's great, you know, to have you on the show and, you know, to give it your time to be here. We really, really appreciate it. And I know we've got lots to talk about. And as in every story, we always kind of start at the beginning. Now, you do have a kind of a weird, funny accent. So starting at the beginning, where did you grow up, Jonathan?
My hometown is a small seaside resort in the United Kingdom called Great Yarmouth. It's on the east coast. In fact, it's the most easterly point of the United Kingdom. And I'm British born and lived in the UK for the first, gosh, what was it, the first 40 years of my life before moving to the US.
Now, did you just remain in Great Yarmouth or did you move around England at all?
I did move around. So I was born in Great Yarmouth and I lived there for the first 17, 18 years of my life before my job took me away, not very far away. I worked for a shoe company. So I was selling shoes for a living. So retail has really been at the heart of my entire career. But then I kind of started moving around with my previous company to Disney, but always in the UK initially.
Right. Before working for Disney, going back to your growing up years again, was Disney ever part of your life growing up?
I think only in as much as Disney's part of everyone's life growing up, isn't it? It's hard to get away from it because it really seeps into all parts of of people's lives. I remember having Disney books as a child and Disney toys as a child. But of course, growing up, without kind of showing my age too much, in an era before VHS videos and then, of course, DVDs and then streaming, going to see a Disney movie was a rare privilege. So we didn't really get much exposure to Disney. And of course, growing up in a time where there was no easy access to a Disney theme park to immerse you in that Disney culture, living in the UK, really you were very Disney kind of came in, but through books and toys, really, an occasional visit to the cinema or movie theater for your American listeners.
You know what? You're really right in what you're saying, and I've said this on the show before, that growing up in England, Disney was not part of my life. And I am going to age myself now, Jonathan, because the very first movie I ever went to see was Mary Poppins. Disney didn't come into my life until I moved from Canada to, America. And yeah, I got drunk on it.
Well, I remember having some Disney books. I remember having Pinocchio, Jungle Book, and I want to say Peter Pan. And I remember as a child reading them over and over again, and they had all of the imagery from the movies. But I think as a young child, because just didn't have access to the actual movie, I don't believe I realized they were movies. I just thought Peter Pan was a book and Jungle Book was a book. Didn't make the connection to the movie at all as a child.
Yeah. I have one quick question, and then I'm going to, I'll jump in here as well. But you said you were the manager of a shoe shop.
Yeah.
Did you think at that point, if you could look to the future, did you ever think for one moment you'd end up as vice president of Disney Stores?
Oh my gosh, never in a million years, no. At school, I kind of went through school as everyone else does, and I was kind of average at most subjects. I did excel at art. I definitely had a creative streak in me. But while I was going through school, I had a part-time job in a shoe store that I used to work in after school and on weekends, and I was really good at it, and I loved it. And in fact, I remember my school days, getting through the school day, and my motivation was getting to the end so I could go and do my job at the shoe store because I really loved every aspect of it. And very quickly, I kind of left school at 16 and went straight into retail. And retail was in my blood, and I had ambitions. I think I was slightly ambitious because I thought, oh my gosh, I want to be a shoe store manager. That was my goal as a teenager. And I did get there very quickly. And I thought I was going to spend the rest of my life selling shoes, to be honest, at one point. But then on a trip, I want to say it must have been 1991, late Christmas of 1991. I took my mother shopping to London, which was a big deal because it was about a 2-hour drive from my hometown. But the UK didn't have many shopping malls at the time, certainly none close to where I lived. So I took my mother Christmas shopping in London and came across a Disney store. And although my career at the shoe company was going extremely well at the time, and I'd been recently promoted to a bigger store, I just discovered this Disney store, and I didn't know they existed at the time. And I remember going into it. It was at the Lakeside Mall, just on the outskirts of London. And it just caught my attention. I remember every aspect, the colors, the music, the smell, all the characters. And it triggered something in me that I thought, I need to know more. I need to be part of this. So we carried on the rest of the day shopping. And I said to my mum, I said, I just need to go back to that Disney store one more time. I went back there, and I remember going up to one of the cast members. I didn't know they were called cast members at the time. And saying, do you have like a head office, a home base address? that I could write to. And this cast member, I remember very vividly, ripped off a piece of register roll, till roll from the register, and wrote a name and a phone number on it. And next day, I remember getting home, phoning this number up, and they gave me an address to write to. And I remember writing a letter that day and sending it off and introducing myself and saying, hey, I don't know if you have any vacancies, but I would love to be part of this in some shape or form. I did this all on the quiet. I didn't tell anyone I was doing this because I felt it was a long shot. But the Disney Store captivated me that much. And that's how it all started.
Wow, what a great story.
And I love the photograph that you sent, Jonathan. Can you speak about the first costume, about the sweater? And it's kind of like a very collegiate type of look. Can you talk about when you first put that costume on, how you felt, how great it felt to put that on?
Yes, certainly. I mean, just to fill in a little bit of the gap between where I finished off on that story, because obviously, again, aging myself, it was a day before email. So it was all done by letter. I remember several weeks later getting a letter from Disney, and it had a Mickey Mouse with a clapper, holding a clapperboard on the envelope. And I got so excited when that popped through my letterbox. And sure enough, they offered me an interview, and I had to go down to London for this interview. But just to cut that long story short, it was probably it was nearly 4 or 5 months after that I was actually offered a job and a start date. And they offered me a job in a new Disney store that they were about to open. Because keep in mind, this was the very, very early days of the Disney store. There was very few Disney stores around. In fact, I think it was only the third or fourth Disney store they were opening in outside of the United States. And it was in a city called Bristol. Now, at the time, my geography wasn't that great in the UK. I wasn't well-travelled. I didn't even know where Bristol was, so I had to look it up on a map. Thought, okay, well, it's on the other side of the country to where I live, but hey, it's for Disney. This is an opportunity I just can't miss. So I accepted it. And within weeks, I found myself in Bristol looking for a place to live. I was living out of a suitcase in a hotel and starting my new career at Disney. But that very first day, the costume, it was something that it was unlike anything else in retail. And by this time, I've been working in retail, 5 years. So I was very familiar with retail. And there was nothing else like it. I remember that first day putting on that costume. I felt different just putting on that. It made me psychologically, it made me look at things differently and feel differently. And it was really powerful. And I remember, of course, at the time, lots of people poked fun at the costume because it was so out of the ordinary compared to any other retail organization. But once you stepped out onto a stage or the shop floor, we called it the stage, once you stepped out on stage into that with that costume, it felt the most natural thing ever. Because, of course, you were surrounded by all the Disney characters and the colors and the music, and of course the costume fitted in perfectly. I will say though, the pants or trousers, sorry, I'll keep translating both UK and American terms. Pants and trousers mean the same thing. The majority of it was made of polyester, so it had this awful habit of everything you touched you got a little electric shock, and I certainly remember that.
Okay, you say Bristol. Where did you end up living in Bristol?
Out from the city centre. So the Disney store was right in the heart of Bristol, in a shopping area called Broadmead. I lived in a little rented one-room apartment, studio flat, in a place called Redland. I didn't have a car at the time, so I used to walk into the city centre every day. And in fact, the whole management team, I was the assistant manager, and of course we had a store manager, there was a fellow assistant manager, and two lead cast members, which was the next step down from the assistant manager. So there was a total of five in the management team for this Disney store. And three of us lived in the same building. We all had studio apartments in the same building. So they were kind of became my family, both at the store and outside of the store. And depending on what shift we worked, although I felt like we were working 7 days a week and long hours, because we all loved it so much. And we all felt like we wanted to be there the whole time and didn't want to miss anything. So we took turns in cooking dinners for the rest of the management team, and we would all go around each other's home depending on who cooked dinner, and it became a real family event. And I have great memories of those early days of Disney Store.
The reason why I say Bristol, I was born in Kent, but I ended up living majority of my years in England in Bristol. So
okay.
I know where Bristol is. I used to live up in Filton. But yeah, cool place, Bristol.
Oh, great city. I didn't know it at all until I physically arrived there on my first day. And I very quickly fell in love with the city. And I made some great friends there. I still have some very good friends that live in Bristol.
Oh, that's so cool, talking to someone that's actually, you know, been in my hometown. So I'm going off the beam, as we say, going off the rails here. So Al, bring us back in.
Yeah, no, it's all good. I'm enjoying listening to this, you know, and I'm just listening to Jonathan when he talks about getting that costume on. And of course, I could speak to that. And I think it's something that Disney as a company does very well. I mean, if you talk to most cast members or leadership or whoever they are, I think going to costuming or putting on that, even if it's just a name tag, I mean, we had done a show on traditions. And when you get that name tag alone at traditions, it's very special. I mean, the Disney store has their own version of traditions. But I could tell you that, just like Jonathan says, it's so nice to have that on, and you do feel different. And you kind of want to, I think what happens is you kind of live it. I don't know if you agree with this, Jonathan, but you kind of live the Disney spirit, so to speak, almost all day. Is that true?
Oh my gosh, yes. Now, I remember the very first time, because as I mentioned earlier, we used showbiz terms throughout the whole store versus retail terms. And we had stage instead of the shop floor. We had backstage, which was the stock room. I apologize, it's trash day at my house and the truck is outside. So that noise you hear in the background will disappear shortly. But I remember that very first day of walking out onto stage in my costume when the store was open. It's still a bit noisy. We'll give it just a brief moment longer and I'll continue the story. There we go, it's gone now. I remember that very first day walking out onto stage when the store was actually open. On the backstage door that led onto stage, there was always a sign in every Disney store that said, "Smile, you're on stage." And they always had a full-length mirror on the door. And I always remember standing in front of that mirror. And the mirror was there to make sure you could just check yourself, make sure you were groomed well and you were your costume was perfect before you went out onto stage. And you'd always read the sign. But, oh my gosh, I was so nervous that for the first time I was actually going to go out onto stage in my costume and represent the Walt Disney Company as a cast member in front of its guests. And the excitement and nervousness, anxiety at the same time, I'll never forget that first time. And of course, it was a real privilege to represent the Disney brand to the guests. And I was very aware of what the Disney brand meant to its guests and to everyone around. So representing it was a real, real responsibility.
You're absolutely right. And I remember feeling the same way, even in recent times. You know, every day when I go out working in the Disney store or the Magic Kingdom, I would always have that same feeling. It was kind of like a butterfly feeling, kind of like a really great feeling, but kind of like the feeling if you've ever like taken music lessons or something and you're going to go on, do a little session or something. It was always like a little bit of butterflies, but also exciting too. But just another question. I'm thinking about the time when you started. You're talking about like the early 90s. That was very much the golden age of Disney cinema. So you had all those wonderful Disney movies going on right about the same time, correct?
Yes. In fact, I joined when The Little Mermaid was just about to come out onto VHS video. And Beauty and the Beast was about to be released theatrically in the UK. Bearing in mind, there was a time difference between the US and the UK. The UK was always about a 6 month behind the US releases at the time. And in fact, in the Disney store, if those remember the very early Disney stores, they had the giant screen at the back of the store that played Disney music and Disney clips. We had Little Mermaid on it almost the moment we opened until we closed. And I fell in love with the music. And to this day, the music from The Little Mermaid remains amongst my favorite Disney music. But that was impactful. And yeah, Little Mermaid followed by Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, all of those. It was a great time to be at Disney. And it was a great start for the Disney store, which was really starting to build up at the time. So to be part of the, as you describe it, part of the golden era of Disney movies, or the second golden era of Disney movies, it was a real privilege. And of course, that was a time where Disney was just Disney. We didn't have Marvel, we didn't have Lucasfilm, we didn't have Pixar. So the variety of Disney movies at that point were really, and all of the merchandise we sold was based on the classics. And actually, as a bit of a Disney trivia buff myself, it was much easier to become a trivia Disney expert than it is for the cast members in this era of Disney when they have to learn about Marvel, Lucasfilm, and Pixar as well. There's a lot of trivia out there now compared to when I first joined Disney.
There certainly is. We had a guest on last week who was like a Marvel expert. I think you might have heard that show, but you're certainly right about that. I never had thought about that until you really said it. And it's quite a challenge now to really consider yourself an expert working at Disney.
As you know, we've always had the annual cast member trivia contest at Disney Store. The cast member with the best trivia knowledge. And I've been part of that program since the early 90s at Disney Store. And as I said, it was much easier to brush up on your trivia knowledge of all things Disney than it is today. You really need to study hard nowadays.
Yes, and you know, there's a lot of, you know, that Disney trivia contest, I could tell you from, now for those who don't know our history, Jonathan, again, was head of stores and I worked at Times Square. I was a lead at Times Square. And just want to say this initially going in is that oftentimes when leaders come from corporate, cast members get very nervous, cast members feel on edge. And Jonathan was always the number one person we wanted to see. And in fact, people would be nervous if Jonathan came, not because they were afraid of you, Jonathan, but because nobody wanted to disappoint you. You, like I said before, you were the closest thing to Uncle Walt. And when you came to the store, you were exemplary as an example. You would speak with the guests. You were just so regular and natural. You had this grace about you that was just beaming. And I can't emphasize that enough of how everybody so looked forward to your visits coming. And I don't know if you realize how much you've done positively for the brand itself and for how many cast members who've just gone on and done such amazing things because of the conversations that you had with them.
They're lovely words, and thank you very much for saying it. I'll be honest, that I think a big part of my success at Disney Store is I always viewed, no matter what job I did at Disney Store, no matter how high up that ladder I got, I always viewed myself as a cast member on stage in a Disney Store. So I never forgot where I started, and I never forgot what it meant to be that cast member stepping out onto stage and representing the brand. And I think that has stayed with me and has benefited me through those 30 years at Disney, because whenever I was in a meeting, no matter how big the decision, I always looked at it from the point of the cast member and the point of the guest. and said, what would the guest want and what would the cast member want to do and how would they feel? And I think using that filter allowed me to make some great decisions throughout my Disney career.
I think it really did, Jonathan. And you were speaking before about the original costumes that were kind of polyester, but a fantastic. And I don't know if you were behind the costume. We never had this conversation, but there was a lovely costume, which is the costume that they still wear, which is the blue pants with the vest. And I think it was designed by Virgin Airlines or some or Tommy Bahama, I believe it was. Did you have a hand in designing that costume?
Well, over the 30 years me being there, I've been part of, I want to say, about five between my time in Europe at Disney Store and my time in the US, five different costume redesigns. And in the later years, I was kind of responsible for the cast member costumes outright. And it was always a project I loved because every so often we'd want to reinvent ourselves and keep ourselves fresh. So along with redesigning the look and feel of the stores, we would redesign the cast costume. But it was always, and I say this with great fondness, it was always one of the most controversial projects to be part of or to lead. Because the reality is, when it comes to what you wear, whether it's what you wear personally or what you wear at work, the clothes that you put on yourself is something that's very personal to each individual person. And to find a costume that is going to fit all body shapes, all ages, all genders, and all tastes, and fit in with the brand is almost mission impossible. Because what one costume, what one person is going to like is not necessarily going to another person is going to like. So it's always a project that I appreciated. I was never going to, whatever the end result, I was never going to please everybody for those reasons. But I still loved it. And I always felt like I always wanted it to stand out and look different and feel like it was, even if you took that costume outside of the environment of a Disney store, if someone looked at that person in that costume, they would instantly say, ah, they're Disney. That was important for me. I never wanted our costume to look boring or ordinary. In fact, anything I did at the Disney store, I never wanted it to be described as ordinary. For me, ordinary was just a word I didn't associate with Disney at all. So costume projects, redesigning costumes, yeah, I played a big role in almost all of the costumes over the years. But it was always a fun job, and I didn't get it right all of the time. And I certainly look back on a few that I wasn't happy with. Often, though, the ones that I was never happy with was where we cut corners, whether it was to save money. Well, actually, that was probably the only reason. It was often cost related. But those, for me, having a costume that the cast member felt very special in was really important, because if the cast member felt Disney and felt special wearing it, the moment they stepped onto stage, it would enhance their performance. It would give them that confidence. So actually, a good costume and investing a bit more money in that uniform was really important to me. And it's something I used to rank quite highly in my list of priorities.
I think you really did a great job with that, Jonathan, because we had a lady on recently who also worked at Times Square, and she was talking about her book that she had written, and it came up about the costume, about how she was so excited when she got the new costume, which was the blue vest and the blue pants, and how amazing that was. And it did. I could tell you from working there that people were very excited about the costume. They loved putting it on. And another thing that you had done, Jonathan, which was really exciting, was that if a Disney store got like a high score on it, on its scorecard, you got to wear special buttons on your costume or wear certain watches. And I think that was a wonderful idea that you had as well.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Disney pins. So I used to introduce pins into all aspects of Disney store life. And you'll know that as a previous Disney store cast member. Personalizing the costume, but still keeping it within brand, and it was definitely something I enjoyed doing and allowing our cast members to do.
You did magnificent. Jonathan, can you tell us what actually got you from, because I in all conversations, what got you actually from England, from the UK to America or to Los Angeles? So where, what was the, like the defining moment where you said, okay, now I'm going to go over to America?
Yeah. I've been here 11 years now, so I'm still here in California. And I'd been for a number of roles within Disney Store Europe. And my last role in Europe, I was the head of director of marketing and guest experience for Disney Store Europe. And it's a role I'd been in for about 4 years. And I really excelled and loved it. I enjoyed every moment of that job. And at the time, the president of Disney Store Worldwide was a gentleman called Jim Fielding. I caught his attention by some of the experiences I'd been introducing into the Disney Store Europe. And on a visit from the US to London, I did a presentation to him on some of those experiences. And he was on the verge of redesigning the Disney Store of the future and kicking off that project. And my presentation was very timely because he then asked me to head up the experience part of the new Disney Store project of redesigning the store of the future. And over a period of about a year, I had the great opportunity to travel to Pasadena in California, which is where Disney Store home base was then based, and help be part of the team that redesigned the future of Disney retail. And it was an amazing opportunity, and I got to meet some amazing people. And the project came to an end, and we launched a The internal name for that store design was Imagination Park, which became one of the main designs. And we remodeled many of the Disney stores over the following years to that design. But when the project came to an end, I went back to my job in London as director of marketing and guest experience. But very quickly after that, Jim reapproached me and said, look, I've got this new role as head of global guest experience based in Pasadena. Would you be interested? And I thought, gosh, I think I spoke to my husband at the time and we had a conversation. I think it took us all of 5 minutes to decide, yes, we would up our lives and move to California, because we kind of figured, what an amazing opportunity. And there was an element of excitement that had I continued my career in London at the time, I think it was somewhat predictable as to what would happen. But I felt moving to California, although I loved my job in London at the time with Disney, and there was an element of risk, I felt it was just, I loved the excitement of the unknown. Anything was possible. So we very quickly said yes. And we moved to California and I picked up this new job.
Had you been to Disneyland at that time when you moved over there? Or was that your first time going to Disneyland?
No, I had been. I'd been fortunate enough in the mid-90s to attend a Disney Store Global Conference, which was at Disneyland. I want to say it was 94, maybe 95. So that was my first trip. But then there was a long gap before I got to go back to Disneyland again. It was the year that Disneyland was celebrating its 45th anniversary. So what year would that make? I've lost track of time.
That would make it like 2007, right, Sheila?
I didn't know we were going to get quizzed.
I'm sorry. It was in the mid-90s anyway. And we stayed at the Disneyland Hotel, so I got to experience the Disneyland Hotel, which was incredible. Of course, it's changed a lot over the years, along with Disneyland. But the Indiana Jones and the Temple of the Forbidden Eye attraction was on the verge of opening. And as part of the conference, we all got to go and experience the ride before it opened to the general public. And oh my gosh, and anyone that's ever been on that attraction knows it's an amazing attraction with the most incredible theme. And it just, I'd never been on anything like that up to that point. And to this day, it remains one of my favorite Disney attractions. But I got to experience it before it opened, officially opened in the park So that was a special memory for my first visit to Disneyland.
Well, that's incredible. I think Sheila has maybe some questions from the jump from England. That must have been quite a culture shock, right, Sheila?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, Jonathan. First of all, your husband's name, what is it?
Bradley.
Bradley. Okay, so Bradley is moving over with you as well. What was it like for you guys? You know, America's so different than England. Did you have, some people go through culture shock. Did you feel that you had gone through that at all on the move?
Yeah, most definitely, yes. Although I wasn't expecting a big cultural difference. Prior to moving here, our annual vacation was always in Walt Disney World. Every year, around about October, with the exception of maybe 1 or 2 years, we would go to Walt Disney World. We'd save all of our money up. It was our big holiday vacation of the year. And we would spend 2 weeks, which is kind of normal for a European vacation to be 2 weeks long, less so here in America. That was a culture shock. Most people only take a week's vacation at a time. And we would go to Walt Disney World. And to be honest, we would spend 2 weeks in Walt Disney World. We would rarely leave property when we were there. And it was our favorite time of the year. And I have very fond memories. But because of that annual trip to Walt Disney World, I always thought that I knew America very well. And because we spoke, generally speaking, spoke the same language, I thought the transition would be very easy. But as I found, it is very different culture there.
Right.
And it took a bit of getting used to, I'll agree.
I would have thought having Bradley with you, like, you know, you didn't come over by yourself. You had Bradley, which, you know, probably did make it that much easier, actually, than if you had come solely. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's so many things done different here. I moved to Canada before I moved here. And I can remember, you know, being so English, you know, going to McDonald's and eating with a, you know, a knife and fork, be it plastic, you know, that's how we used to eat in England. You know, yeah. It's changed now. You know, I use my fingers, but it's just stupid little things. Or, you know, it is different. And some people can't handle it.
And free soda pop refills, as you don't get in the United Kingdom. If you buy a Coke or an orange Fanta, if you want a second cup, you have to buy a second cup. Whereas here, they would refill it for free. And that was a pleasant culture shift from what I've been used to.
Yeah.
But actually, the real culture shifts were much more subtle, especially in the workplace. And it was small little things that kind of, when I look back on it, we're very different about how you treated people, your colleagues at work, and different kind of protocols when you were having a meeting with something. It was those subtle little things that I slowly learned that are very different in the US to how business operates in the UK. And I had to adjust my style. I didn't want to stop being myself. I wanted to remain true to who I am and how I operate. But at the same time, you have to modify your style to fit the environment and the culture that you work within. So it was the first year or two was very much a learning curve, steep learning curve for me to find out how people do business and how you communicate in business in the US versus the UK. But I will say, and I believe this wholeheartedly, having had roles within Disney Store Europe, where we operated in many markets from UK to France, Spain, Italy, Portugal, and so on, and becoming, having team members in those countries as well that I was responsible for, I learned to understand the impact of cultural differences from a business perspective and how to adjust my style accordingly. But one thing I learned, and I believe in to this day, when it came to the Disney Store guest experience, it was universal. And what our Italian guests versus our French guests versus our guests in the United Kingdom versus our guests in the US and Canada, at the heart of it, they were consistent. What makes a guest smile when they walked through a door of a Disney store was the same the world over. And I really believe that. And that, in terms of what I delivered from a guest experience at Disney store, that allowed me to be very consistent between my roles in Europe and my roles in North America.
Now, did Bradley end up working for Disney in any form or?
No, well, actually, no, once he did, because when it came to Thanksgiving, and you're all familiar, the US listeners, to Black Friday, the biggest shopping day of the year, which is a crazy, crazy shopping day for retail in North America. Our business on Black Friday in Disney Store US would jump so much that we just physically didn't have enough cast members, because we'd be open for almost 24 hours solid. And so we would bring in family and friends just for to help support the cast members and become honorary cast members. And he volunteered one year to do that. So he worked in the Disney store for, I think it was 2 4-hour shifts over Thanksgiving one year. So if that counts as working for Disney, yeah. He certainly reminds people that he did work for Disney. But actually, when we first moved here, same-sex marriage wasn't recognized in the US. So right. Legally, I was on a visa and he was on a different visa, and legally he couldn't work because they just didn't recognize same-sex marriage at the time.
Right.
Whereas it was different in the UK. They had already brought in civil partnership for same-sex. And so for the first couple of years, he couldn't work legally, which was a blessing, really, because it allowed him to stay at home and figure out our life in the US and figure out all of the stuff that needed to be done at home and adjusting our setting up phones and setting up all of the different things you need to live in this day and age, while I was kind of at the office the whole time. But my husband is a writer, so he's published 3 books.
Ooh.
And that took up most of his time.
Okay, I am, Al, I hope you don't mind. I'm going to go off the beam a little bit here. What kind of books does he write?
His 3 books are a series of books, and they're categorized as rom-coms, romance comedies.
Okay. And he sells them what, through Amazon?
Through Amazon, yeah. And other online book stockists. So you can either buy a hard copy or you can download a digital copy. Sorry, I feel like I'm having a plug for his books now.
No, I'm giving you the plug.
First book was Commitment Issues by Bradley Brady.
Interesting.
Bradley Brady. And I'll tell you what, as we're closing out the show, we'll get that once again. We'll mention it again and where you can buy the books.
Sure.
Bradley Brady,
B-R-A-D-Y.
Okay.
He'll be very pleased he got mentioned.
Jonathan, I have to ask you, now, of course, I know you're a big Star Wars fan like many of us, but I know you've probably had a lot of amazing, spectacular days working for Disney, but when it was announced that Disney had purchased Lucasfilm, was that truly one of the most exciting days of your life?
Oh my gosh, yes. I remember it vividly. In fact, I was in a meeting at the time with 2 Disney executives. One of them happens to be head of Walt Disney Company now. So I was actually across the table from Bob Chapek. So Bob Chapek was head of Disney Consumer Products at the time, which Disney Store was part of. And my then boss, a gentleman called Paul Gaynor, was sitting next to Bob Chapek, and Paul was very aware that I was a lifelong Star Wars fan. And I think the public announcement was like 3 p.m. in the afternoon Pacific time. And Bob Chapek, I'm assuming, well, I clearly knew that this announcement was imminent. And just before 3 o'clock, they started looking at me and smiling. And I felt very conscious, because I was already anxious because I was in the meeting with like the head of consumer products, Bob Chapek, at the time. And but Paul Gaynor had clearly told Bob that I was a big Star Wars fan. And then minutes before 3 o'clock, Paul said, you might want to start looking at your email. And it was just an unusual thing to say in this middle of this meeting, which was, I can't recall what the meeting was about now, because my only memories of it was the Star Wars announcement. But sure enough, straight after the announcement had gone out, my email inbox had lit up, because all my friends, families and colleagues know what a big Star Wars fan I am. They all started messaging me saying, have you seen the news? Have you seen the news? So that's how I found out about Disney acquiring Lucasfilm. So yeah, a very memorable day. And of course, in the months and years to follow, it was kind of a dream come true, because I was been a Star Wars fan since the movie came out in 77, or in the UK, it was late 77, early 78. So as a young child, I was a huge fan. In fact, it was the very first movie that my father took me and my brother to see at a movie house at the cinema. So not only was it the first time I was seeing a movie on the big screen, it was the first, it happened to be Star Wars. So it made an impact on me, which has stayed with me for the rest of my life. And I then became a big collector. So to be working in a company that now owns Star Wars as a franchise, and the early months and years I got to work on Star Wars projects and bring Star Wars to the Disney store, it was a dream come true for me.
I can imagine. And you, speaking about your collection, do you remember the first thing you ever collected, Star Wars, and like when that was, how old you were?
Yeah, I was 7 years old. I don't know the exact date I got to see Star Wars, but I know Star Wars came out at the theatre December of 1977 in the UK. So much later than the May date in the US. And I can only assume it was either December 77 or January 78 that my father took me and my brother to see it. And as a special treat afterwards, he took us to the store and he said, I'll treat you both to something. So if you want to pick something out. And I remember picking out a Princess Leia pencil case. Pencil case as in the case that you take your pencils and pens to school with you in. And I picked out one with Princess Leia on, and my older brother picked out one with Darth Vader on it. And I used that pencil case, and it became the very first item. I still have that pencil case. It takes pride of place in my collection. It's a bit worse for wear now. It was well used as a child, but it kind of triggered my love of Star Wars and Princess Leia, who's my favorite Star Wars character. So yeah, a Princess Leia pencil case.
Wow, that's incredible. Well, not to give any spoilers out, so you must be very happy with the new Kenobi series Princess Leia, correct?
And that was, I wasn't expecting that. I'm sure we can talk about spoilers now from the first three episodes by now, because if you've got Disney Plus and you haven't seen it yet, you're probably not that interested in Star Wars. But yes, a young Princess Leia features in the new Kenobi series, and that really delighted me. That's probably one of my favorite things about the series so far.
Speaking of Kenobi series, you actually met the star of the series recently at a Star Wars celebration, correct?
Yeah, Star Wars celebration, 2 weeks ago now, down in Anaheim at the Anaheim Convention Center, which I think it was my fourth Star Wars celebration convention I've been to. My first one was in London many years ago. And then since living in the US, I've been to all of the Star Wars celebration conventions. And yeah, he was kind of one of the headline acts. And I got to have my photo with him and meet him for an autograph. Of course, so did everyone else. So my time with him was fleeting, to say the least, but he was an absolute gentleman, considering he must have been signing autographs and having photographs for hours. he remained so professional, so kind and appreciative to all the fans. It was such a pleasure to meet him and to say I'd met him. And of course, to your point, so topical right now with the show just recently being released. So that was one of the highlights of the Star Wars Celebration convention for me.
That's amazing. And, you know, I can imagine how much with your collection, because you did provide us with a nice picture of your collection. How do you go about moving such a collection like that back to England?
Good question.
Well, let's just say I'm grateful that I'm not working at the moment, because it took a long, long time. So it's all been packed up now and is en route to the UK, even though I'm still here in the US. I would say it took me, I'm going to say 5 weeks to prepare and unpack the Star Wars collection. Because I collected heavily as a child, and I just didn't stop. I just didn't grow out of collecting Star Wars. So by the time I know what I've got, because I have everything on a database. And in fact, earlier this year, I celebrated my 9,000th item in my collection.
Wow.
So
wow.
Over 9,000 different items in my Star Wars collection. And it took up a large portion of my house. And I'm quite a broad collector when it comes to Star Wars. In the early days of collecting Star Wars, you could become a completist. And I'm sure there was completists out there. And anyone that doesn't know what that term means in the collector world, it means you collect everything available, or you try to collect everything available. But of course, after 45 years of Star Wars merchandise, it's pretty much impossible. Well, it is impossible to collect everything. So yeah, it's a big deal, and it's a big part of my life and has been for the last 45 years.
My son is very much like you, but not with Star Wars. He does music, action figures, and things like from old 80s sitcoms like Alf or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I go to his house and it's crazy. So I can imagine, you know, what your house would be like as well. A couple of quick questions about collecting. One, who does the dusting?
Well, often people ask me that. Anyone's ever been to my house? It's often one of the first questions they ask, because not only did I collect Star Wars, having worked for Disney for 30 years and my love of Disney, I had a sizable Disney, broad variety of Disney collectibles. My husband is a big Doctor Who fan. Mm. He collected Doctor Who. He also loves music, so he had a big collection of CDs and just different music memorabilia. So we definitely both have the collector gene. But yeah, one of the first questions anyone ever came to our house would ask, who dusts? And my answer is often, we have, I think, some mystery pixies come into the house overnight and dust it. I think we don't have pets. And I know pets can add a lot of dust to a home. We don't have children. I know children can add a lot of dust to the home. Actually, over the years, you get very strategic with your dusting. So you dust the front of the shelf. If you're having people around to visit, you knew what was visible and what wasn't. So if you looked a bit closer, I'm sure you could find a good layer or two of dust in certain parts of the house.
I know when my two boys was growing up, they were big time into Star Wars. And I think for birthdays and Christmas, they had anything bought for them that was on the market related to Star Wars. And I look back now and I don't know what's happened to the stuff, you know, over the years, you know, you donate it, whatever. But I just think now some of the items that they had, you know, back in the 80s, 90s, I mean, what it would be worth today, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely, I think there's two types of collectors. There's the collectors out there that really are collecting for an investment.
Yeah.
And then there's collectors that just love collecting. without a doubt, I fall into the category. I just love collecting. I love all things Star Wars. I love collecting Star Wars. I love the experience of going to a convention and looking through all of the different stalls and finding something I don't have or something that I like and adding it to my collection. I love showing off my collection, having visitors around and giving them a tour of my collection. I actually merchandise my Star Wars collection by decade. If I could actually walk you through the all 45 years history of Star Wars merchandise by how I've merchandised and laid out my Star Wars rooms. I say rooms with an S, because I have multiple rooms filled with it. And it was all displayed. And I think my retail experience came into play there as to how I displayed. I was very particular about how I displayed my collection. But, the value, without a doubt, you're right, the value has gone up, and especially in recent years, I think there's been a new, with Disney Plus and the new Mandalorian, there's been a new interest in, and the more recent movies, in Star Wars, and the value has gone up considerably. But for me, the value was irrelevant. I just loved the fun of the hunt to find something I didn't have. I loved the community spirit of collecting and talking to other fans and collectors. I loved going to conventions, and that's what I've loved about collecting. I've been collecting, as I said, I think it's in my genes, because I don't know what it is. I've always been one of these people that if I have one item of something, great. The moment I have two, I have this desire to collect them. And I remember collecting Smurfs. Anyone remember Smurfs?
Oh, yes, gosh, I remember. Yes. I
collected Smurfs in the mid-70s as a young child, and I still have my Smurfs. I collected Lego. I'm a big Lego fan. Over the years, I collect Disney. But the Star Wars is the one collection that stayed true. I've stayed loyal to and true to throughout all my years.
Jonathan, I don't want to see this show run out of time before we find out what your future plans are. So if it's okay with Al, I wouldn't mind just jumping to the future, but we can jump back afterwards and fill in, you know, the rest of the program with questions related to Star Wars or, you know, Disney. You're saying Star Wars is, you know, sailing across the pond at this moment. So how do you feel about, you know, you haven't got your collection. It's on its way to England. And how soon are you going to rejoin in England?
Yeah, well, it's all happening very quickly now. It's really picking up pace. So because our collections were so overwhelming, is probably the best way to describe them. I was very conscious there was no way I was going to be able to sell my house here in Los Angeles whilst it housed all of the collections, because I can only imagine anyone coming to view the house. I think within seconds of walking through the door would have forgotten about the fact that they were here to look at the house. Would spend the whole time in the house enjoying the collections. So it became very apparent early on that we were going to have to move the collections out, and knowing it would be on a boat for a long period of time. So everyone, please give good thoughts to that boat to make sure it arrives in the UK safely. We're very conscious that to sell a house, we'd have to vacate our collections from it, which we have. In fact, the house is void of Star Wars, Disney, Doctor Who, and any Smurfs, Lego. And we love our house here in California. We've been very fortunate. We found a beautiful house with beautiful views, and we're going to miss it terribly. But taking all of the things that we loved about our house out of the house, it helps you detach emotionally from the house. And I think it's been a good thing to help us step back into our UK life and into a new life back home in the UK. So that's worked. But yeah, it's I would describe the decor in the house now that all of those collections that have left as ordinary, a nice ordinary because it's a lovely house, but ordinary. And as I mentioned earlier in our call today, I don't tend to like that word, and it's not a word that I associate myself with at all. But hopefully someone else will be able to come into this house with vision and make it their own. But yeah. In terms of your question on timing, really it's a case of how quickly we sell our house. But the moment we sell our house, we'll be booking a flight back to the UK.
Okay, so you're heading back to the UK. What area? Are you going back to the town that you grew up in or new adventures?
We're definitely, I think, with the pandemic and the changes to people's lives that the pandemic brought, I think a lot of people, I'm sure yourselves included, sat up during that time and reevaluated your life and what's important. And we suddenly became very conscious that for a couple of years, we were unable to visit our family back home in the UK. And of course, family is very important to both of us. And it helped. It played an important part in our decision to move back to the UK. So being home to see our nieces and nephews grow up, which we've kind of not seen much of over the last 11 years since we've been here, is an important part. So we are going to move back closer to our family. We're not planning to go back to our hometown, but we're planning to go back to a city called Norwich.
Yep.
Which is kind of the closest big city to our hometown. So we'll be close to our family. But also, I mean, we've lived in London, we've lived in Los Angeles. So Norwich, going back to a city, it's a beautiful city, a lot of culture there, a lot of things to do. It's a lovely part of the United Kingdom. So we're looking to make our new home in that part of the world.
Cool. And what's your plan for where you're hoping to work? Have you got any plans for that?
We do. I've worked for a big corporation now. I worked for Disney for 30 years, and I worked for the British Shoe Corporation prior to that. So my entire career has been working for a big corporation. Now, there's a lot of good things that come working for a big corporation, but there's also not so good things. And kind of looked at what I do next. Do I go and work for another big corporation? I kind of explored all the opportunities. But a dream I had as a teenager was to always have my own business, in particular my own store. Of course, I think from my early years of loving retail as a career, I've always dreamed of having my own store, in particular a toy store. As an avid toy collector, it's always been something I'm very passionate about. And I think that's why I've enjoyed and survived so long at the Disney store, because I not only loved retail, I loved the brand and I loved collecting the brand. So I could look at the things we sold in the Disney store from both sides. I could look at it from a business perspective and I could look at it from a fan perspective. And I think I need to work somewhere where I absolutely love what I do and I have a passion for what I sell or what service I deliver. And to that end, of course, I think you're all aware that the vast majority of Disney stores have sadly gone away now. I feel there's a void there that can be filled. So to that end, I'm looking to create my own business and work for myself in partnership with my husband. And hopefully create an environment, a retail environment. We're looking to add in a food element. So we're looking to create our own business that combines a collectible store with a diner, with an event space, kind of a combination of those three businesses.
Wow. And
wow, it's going to be, it's going to really focus on retro toys and collectibles, specializing in science fiction, fantasy, and animation. So I think those are three genres that I'm very passionate about and have a lot of knowledge on. Of course, combined with my retail and business knowledge, I'm excited to go it alone and do this with my husband and create an environment unlike any other.
That sounds incredible. I mean, who's ever out there listening, Jonathan, when you open it up, please send me an invitation. I'll jump a flight. I want to see this for myself. But to anybody out there listening, let me tell you, this is the man you want to work for. I've never met Bradley, but I'm sure he's, you know, wonderful person. These are the people you want to work for. You can't look for any better, ask for any better. I'm so excited. Is there any date or estimation when it's going to open?
No, we're working on the plans at the moment. We don't have a location fixed yet. Our priority really right now is moving back to the UK and finding a new home in the UK. But once we've achieved that goal, our full focus will shift to creating the new business. But certainly in terms of the groundwork, the ideas, the format, I've already started work on that. We've already started work on that, and it's taking shape. We have a very, very exciting concept, and I believe it will be unique. I'm confident it'll be unique. There'll be nothing else like it. And without giving away a lot of the details, because it's still very much a work in progress, we're very much going to play into the science fiction element of it. And to your point, eventual employees, I want to make sure it's an environment that, just as I tried to achieve at the Disney Store over all of those years, for me, I very much am aware and value the importance of the employee and what they bring to the business. And without them, you don't have a business. And I want to make a place and create an environment where my new employees love coming to work every single day, love every aspect of their job, dedicate to their job, feel great pride in who they work for, in the company that they're going to work for, and have a lot of fun. Life's too short. We live in a strange old world right now, and it's important that you try and enjoy every day, and that means your work life as well as your personal life, and you achieve that balance. And I feel that's something I try to push, importantly, as a priority during my Disney Store years. And now that I'm looking to own my own business, will be a number one in priority for me there as well. And again, as I said, without giving away too many details, there is going to be a whole backstory to this store, collectible store, diner. It's going to be run by a group of aliens from a whole nother planet. And every employee in the store plays a role of one of those aliens, and they will have their own backstory. And that story will feed through into the design of the location of the store and diner. It'll feed through into the experiences. And it's gonna be, as I said, unlike anything else.
Well, I don't know about you, Sheila, but you want to apply? Maybe me and Sheila can apply.
Yeah, this sounds an amazing project. And I don't, in some ways, want to ask too much about it because, you know, until you got that door opened, you know, you don't want to give too many secrets away. But I would be more than happy, you know, once you open that door and, you know, get your first customers coming in, if you want to come back on the show and talk about it, about the experience of, you know, leaving America and coming back to England, I'd be more than happy to do that. We have listeners in England that I think would find this really interesting to find out where you are located when you do find that spot.
That's very kind of you to offer, and I was certainly at the point when that becomes reality, I will take you up on that offer.
Cool.
That sounds great.
Wow, Al, you're quiet.
I'm taking it all in and I'm saying, wow, I'm thinking about, I've never been to the UK and I think this is going to be the thing that gets me over to the UK. I think I'm going to walk in there and, you know, start collecting and just go in there and, I don't know. I mean, should I wear a Star Wars shirt, Jonathan, or a Star Trek shirt? I mean, I don't know. What should I wear?
Well, the beauty of this, though, now that I'm not completely affiliated with Disney, I can celebrate all of the brands. So, it won't just be Star Wars, Marvel, Disney, Pixar. We'll celebrate Doctor Who. I'm a big fan of 80s sci-fi from E.T. All those great movies, we'll celebrate those. So whatever you're a fan of under the sci-fi, fantasy, or animation genres, we will celebrate. And this will be a great community space that you're just going to want to come and hang out. Whether you come for a burger and a milkshake, or whether you come because you're a collector, whatever reason that's going to bring you to our business, this is a place that we're going to celebrate your community and your love for all things under those genres.
Jonathan, at the beginning of this episode, I asked you the question, did you ever think that when you were working in that shoe store that you would become vice president, you know, of the Disney stores? Well, I'm going to ask you again. Would you have ever thought you'd be opening your own special place, unique, I would imagine, to England?
No. I think I would have been less shocked if I knew I was on the path to having my own store than being vice president within the Walt Disney Company. I think that bit, I still occasionally have to look back on that and pinch myself. Those 30 years flew by. I can't believe 30 years went by so quickly. But the opportunities I had there were just incredible. And although it's very sad that it came to an end, I'm very appreciative for the years and opportunities and experiences I got while I was there. And to have my own business as a finale to my career feels like the right thing to do. And it's the thing I'm most excited about. But no, I look back and I categorize myself as a small-time boy from a small town that got lucky. I would never have categorized myself as ambitious. I never set out on my career thinking I want to be a vice president in a big company or the owner of my own business. I think I got there through hard work. I would categorize myself as a hard work and passionate. The passion came through in everything that I do. The passion came through in my love for Disney and the brands, franchises under Disney. And I think that's got me through the 30 years. And as I said, gave me many great opportunities that I'll never forget. And this feels the right path to go down now. I'm very excited about it.
Wow.
Even in the current climate, I mean, it's a tough economic climate out there at the moment.
Yeah.
And I'm very aware that starting up and running own business is going to bring lots of challenges. I'm up for the challenge. I'm a great problem solver. And I've certainly had many challenges in my 30 years at Disney and had to solve many problems. And I'm always up for the challenge, though. And I see this as a great challenge. But for me, I'm always up for the challenge if it's around something that I'm excited and passionate about. And collectibles and science fiction and animation, they're all things I'm very passionate about, and so I look forward to this.
And I'm sure if I asked you the question, I'm sure you could come back with loads of answers on this one, but if you can fine tune it to maybe one moment in your 30-year career with Disney that really stood out for you, is there one that comes to mind straight away?
That is the toughest question on the planet. 30 years, although as I said, it went very quickly. It is a long time to be of one company and one part of their business. Gosh, I'm going to take you back to that very first day that I described earlier. That very first day I stepped out onto stage as a cast member at the Disney store, wearing that Disney costume and representing the brand for the very first time. That was such a powerful day. Such excitement, such anxiety. Everything was possible that day. And that was a fantastic day. And that really stuck in my mind.
Wow.
I mean, as I said, I got to go to two Star Wars movie world premieres. Never in a million years would I have expected to get to go to them, being a Star Wars fan long before I was a Disney fan. I got to work with Bobby and Kristen Lopez, who you probably know as the writers of the music for Frozen.
Yes.
I got to work with them before. I had dinner with them in New York to discuss the Disney store, because not many people know this, but the music we used to play in the Disney store, the unique music to Disney store, was actually written by Bobby and Kristen Lopez. I worked with them on that project, and I went to Abbey Road Studios in London to record the music on the same stage that they recorded the original Star Wars music with John Williams. All these, I mean, that I could sit here for the next 2 hours and list off incredible experiences I got to do in my years at Disney, for which I will be forever thankful. So, yes, I couldn't answer. I'm going to give you the answer my very first day of stepping on stage, but I could list for hours all of the other great experiences that have stuck with me.
That's okay, Jonathan, because, you know, once your store opens, you are going to come back on and I will ask you that question again. I think it was a bit unfair of me to put you on the spot, actually. So, but nothing's easy on a podcast, okay? You don't get it easy, even if you are a past vice president. So there you go. Going back to England then, I know you're excited about the family and things. What's one thing that you're really looking forward to, and what's one thing you think you might miss by leaving America?
Ooh. My official answer for what I'm looking forward to is spending more time with my family and friends in the United Kingdom.
Right.
My unofficial answer is food. There's so many foods that I miss terribly from my... from the United Kingdom that I'm looking forward to. And not many Americans will know this term, but I'm looking forward to Marks and Spencer's food hall. So much of that food that I just adore and I miss terribly. I'm looking forward to real fish and chips again.
Yep.
Yes, you can buy fish and chips here in the US, but no, you can't buy real fish and chips here. So, but yeah, it's a long list of food. I'm looking forward to the ease of going to the local store and buying Cadbury's chocolate.
Oh, shut up.
Real Cadbury's chocolate. Yes, I can get it here, but it's imported and it costs like 4 times as much. And so, yeah, food rates quite highly on the list. But, of course, my family and friends and being close to them again is the real reason.
Well, Jonathan, talking about food, I can't think of the name of the store, but it is up in California, and that's where I do my, you know, little shop once a month. I get my, you know, Walker's chips, crisps. I get, my chocolate. But now it's getting hot. Now I'm going to have to wait till the fall because it would just melt between California and South Carolina. But I just treated my husband to a jar of pickled cockles, which I don't know if it was like for you when growing up, but for me growing up, when I was grown up, I should say, not growing up, but going into the pubs, they would come around with a basket with cockles and mussels and you could buy them. Yeah, they probably didn't do it in your day, right?
Well, no, they did. I mean, growing up in a seaside resort, Great Yarmouth, all fish food was big on the menu. But Great Yarmouth, anyone that's ever been there, I doubt if any of your listeners have been there. It's famous for its chips, and chips being French fries, not crisps, not chips as in America, American terms, but chips off the market is the term that anyone that comes from Great Yarmouth is very familiar with. And certainly anyone who's ever gone on vacation to Great Yarmouth will be familiar with. But they're famous for their chips off the market. And it's basically a town market and has a number of speciality chip stalls where you'll line up and you'll get a portion of hot chips. They'll wrap them in newspaper and you'll pour salt and vinegar on them. And you'll let them go soggy with the vinegar. And you'll walk around Yarmouth town eating your chips out of the newspaper. The best chips on the planet. So I'm looking forward to those again.
With the vinegar, you know, running off your fingers. Oh, my gosh, Jonathan.
I make myself hungry just talking about
it. I know. What's one thing you might miss about America?
Well, certainly about California. I always dreamt of living in America. All those years and trips to Walt Disney World in Florida, it was always a dream to go and live there because, oh my gosh, I used to love every minute of going to Walt Disney World in Florida. So when the opportunity actually came to live and work in America, came up, but in California, there was that initial, okay, California, I don't know that very well. Well, I didn't know it at all, really. But I saw it as an opportunity just to get into America and get a work visa, ultimately then a green card, to be able to work here. And but what happened is, oh my gosh, I fell in love with California.
Yeah.
And I think now, if it happened all over again and I was asked to, before I moved to the US, did I want to go to Florida or California, I would have a hands down. Even though I know Florida very well and I have fond memories of Walt Disney World there, I would say California, without a doubt. And I'm going to miss the sunshine, there's no doubt about it. I never deemed myself as a sun person. I enjoyed the four seasons that the United Kingdom enjoys. But having warm sunshine almost 365 days a year, looking out the window and always seeing blue sky, definitely is uplifting and puts a smile on your face and gives you a good feel. And I'm going to miss that. So, yes, I'm going to say sunshine.
Sunshine.
You won't get to see quite as much of it in the United Kingdom.
Now, before I close out the show, was there any other things that you just wanted to touch on?
I just wanted to say to Jonathan what a great privilege it was to work for you and to meet you and to just say again how such an impact you've had on everybody. And I know you're going to go on to your business and do the same thing. And I guess what I'm hoping for is that if your business is a success, which I think it's going to be in England, I'd love to see some offshoot of it open up here. So maybe you want to send some of your collection back across the pond again.
You never know. You never know.
I think he's hoping for Sarasota, Florida. Did I say it right? Yeah.
That would work real well. I'd be willing to commute the hour over to Walt Disney World in Orlando for it, for sure.
I'll keep that in mind. For me, I mean, your words, for me, when I look back on my career to date, and certainly my 30 years at Disney, that some of the wonderful cast members I got to meet and had the privilege to work with, I think that's the bit that will stay with me the most. And both Disney in Europe and Disney in North America, I mean, Disney, you should never forget the passion and the hard work and the commitment that its cast members bring to their jobs. And no other industry, no other company, I think, celebrates such loyalty from its employees as Disney does. And my advice to those that now stay behind and at Disney is never forget that. And it's something that I learned at a very early age. I learned it from my father, I think unknowingly. My father was a very quiet man, but he had this, he worked in retail as well, and he had this customer service ethic that I believe I learned from him at a very early age. And he treated his employees so well. And that stayed with me and it served me very well. And I just hope that Disney continues that trend and looks after its cast members and never, ever forget that without them, they can't go out and deliver what they need to deliver.
Great words.
Great words of wisdom.
Yeah. So in closing, just to go back to Bradley's books that are on Amazon, Bradley Brady, B-R-A-D-Y. Go check them out. Actually, we're talking about food. I'm looking at one of his books now, and they've got cupcakes on the front. So this is killing me at this moment. I'm actually starving now. Definitely, Jonathan, the offer really does stand that, you know, once you're up and running, if you want to come back on, we'd have our arms opened, ready for you to do another episode with us. And wishing you all the best of luck on your move. Hope it all goes sailing smoothly across back over the pond. And I can't thank you enough for giving up your time to come and join us.
Well, thank you for the invitation. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you both and getting to know you a bit more. And I wish you every success in your future endeavours and your future podcasts. So I'm certainly a big fan now and a big follower of your podcast. So I look
So sweet of you.
Jonathan.
Yeah, and you know, I'll just wait for the big package of goodies coming back across the pond.
Yeah. Hey,
listen, Jonathan, once again, thank you so much to our listeners. We love you. Thanks for staying to the end of this amazing episode with Jonathan. And until next time, take care. So it's time to say goodbye, everybody. Goodbye,
Al. Listeners. Good night, Sheila. Good night, Jonathan.
Good night.
Or we should say good afternoon, Jonathan, because it's only, 1:30 here, which is... Oh, no, you're still in the morning. Oh, well, never mind, Jonathan. Bye, everyone.
Stars glow for you. Go see the world, cause it's all so brand new. Don't close your eyes, cause your future's ready to shine. It's just a matter of time before we learn how to fly. Welcome to the rhythm of the night. There's something in the air you can't deny. It's been fun, but now I've got to go.
Thank you!